Now to that other contentious issue the Prime Minister is pushing. The Lowy Institute's Rory Medcalf has been both a nuclear non-proliferation diplomat and a diplomat in India. And he says the Gillard government is making the right decision in moving to sell uranium to India. He says while it's an imperfect option, it is long overdue and that the ban has damaged Australia's relationship with India.
It has done harm. It's been a signal of mistrust. And this at a time when most other nuclear suppliers internationally have moved to open regulated civilian nuclear commerce with India, Australia has been left behind.
Doesn't allowing sales to a country that's not a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty send a message to other countries, like, say, China and Pakistan, that they too can ignore the conditions of the NPT?
The relationship of uranium, India and the NPT is certainly an awkward question. It's not an easy question to answer. But India is something of a unique case. By various quirks of history, India didn't test the bomb before the treaty came into force, whereas China and several other countries did. Now, there is a question of whether this sends a negative signal, but you've got to think of the developments in the past 5 years or so. The US-India nuclear deal that really began this process, the decision in 2008 by nuclear suppliers, including Australia, to allow an exception for India to have civilian nuclear commerce with the world. These things have happened, and yet we haven't seen a cascade of nuclear proliferation.
You mentioned the decisions over the last 5 years or so. The Minister for Resources said today that the 2007 decision by the US to sell uranium to India made Australia's position untenable. Did that US decision effectively neuter the NPT?
I don't think so. The 2010 review conference of the NPT, where President Obama and others, including Kevin Rudd, really led a push to strengthen the treaty, came after the US-India nuclear deal. So in a way, an arrangement for India could make the NPT more sustainable, not less. If the NPT was, I guess, neutered or destroyed by the US-India nuclear deal, we would have seen more evidence of it now than we have.
But if we're seeing a de facto NPT in these negotiations with India, why doesn't the international community simply admit that the existing NPT is pointless and junk it?
Well, essentially, you've got almost 200 countries that are party to a treaty. If you reopen negotiations on a treaty on the scale of the NPT, you're going to have, a decade's worth of the most difficult diplomacy that could end up with a worse outcome than the one we have. Reopening the NPT is not really a viable option, and instead, the best we can hope for is really carving out these exceptional parallel arrangements for countries that are, in every other sense, good non-proliferation actors.
Every time you do that, though, don't you weaken the non-proliferation treaty?
Well, in a sense, the weakness in the non-proliferation treaty came at its inception. There was a flaw in the treaty from the beginning, and India was the most glaring, notable example of that. A major country essentially locked out, refused the right to possess nuclear weapons for defence and refused the right to have civilian nuclear commerce with the world.
If Australia is going to negotiate a detailed protocol with India on the use of Australian uranium, why not just insist that India sign the NPT?
This is the basic problem. For India to sign the NPT, it has to automatically surrender its entire nuclear arsenal. There is no way that any sane Indian leader can do that while China and Pakistan possess nuclear arsenals. And in China's case, of course, it possesses nuclear weapons under the NPT because the Chinese were, I guess, pressing it enough to get round to testing a nuclear bomb in the 1960s before the NPT came into force.
You're sort of pointing out all these holes in the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty and yet still saying that we shouldn't, as an international community, junk it. What is the current benefit of the NPT?
Look, the Non-Proliferation Treaty has certainly slowed the rate of proliferation. Many countries, including Australia, I would add, that contemplated building nuclear weapons back in the 1960s, ended up deciding not to, partly as a result of the NPT. It is an imperfect arrangement. I certainly support the NPT, but it needs to adapt, and one way it can adapt without some sort of complete reopening of the treaty, which could end up with a worse outcome, is to carve out detailed parallel arrangements and obligations for key countries outside the NPT. And the only one of those countries, I think, at the moment that really warrants special treatment is India.
And yet, surely, as we keep finding these loopholes or carving out these exceptions, we weaken the treaty even further.
But I don't think there will be more exceptions carved out in the foreseeable future. I mean, Pakistan is a completely different case to India. It's a country that has a record of proliferation. There's all sorts of fears about instability within Pakistan, risks of its weapons falling in the wrong hands. So I don't think that other than China, any country has any desire to have a nuclear supply relationship. All of this is imperfect. It's in some sense, we're all going to have to muddle through, but certainly we can't hold rigidly to the NPT as it was, nor should we junk it. That's diplomacy.
Doesn't a decision like this, though, give China the moral high ground? It could say that it can sign a similar deal with Pakistan.
Well, China has already been involved in accepting the exception for India, but China's arrangements in selling reactors to Pakistan actually go back to the 1980s, and indeed China, unlike the United States, has not tried to get international endorsement at the Nuclear Suppliers Group for its arrangements with Pakistan.
Rory Medcalf, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Rory Medcalf is a former intelligence analyst and diplomat with experience in both Indian and nuclear non-proliferation diplomacy. He's the program director of international security at the Lowy Institute.